Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord number 52 to 55. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, in these couple of issues, we've got the backup feature of Dragon Sword for a bit. It flips out. We get another one on the final of the four issues we're going to be talking about. We also get to the point where we have a new artist in this batch of issues.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because I noticed something different with the art, but I just assumed it was an inker. I wasn't paying attention. But yeah, we did.
Speaking of inkers, you remember the issue where there was the wager and the better guy that Travis really hated?
Yes.
If you take that character's name, and I forget what it was, it is an anagram for Vince Coletta, the inker for quite a few issues of Warlord, like maybe tons and tons of them.
Oh.
Apparently, Grell was not happy with the inking.
Ah.
So, kind of took vengeance on character as a way to deal with that.
That's hilarious. Took him out in the comic.
Yeah, I kind of found that funny. So, when we last left Travis, he was leaving Demios to the wolves out in the Arctic, and then we pick up here in 52. And I thought this was kind of interesting because on the very first page, we've got Travis. He's out there with a compass, which didn't realize he had a compass. It's like, yep, I'm going south. I'm going in the right direction. And I'm like, maybe it's just me. I mean, I was a Boy Scout and stuff. I'm like, is using a magnetic compass at the Terminator of Skartaris and the outside world really going to work? I mean, how would it work inside Skartaris? How would all that play out? And of course, we come back to that later.
Yeah, it shouldn't be working because he's following it, but it's definitely not doing what it should be doing.
Yep, it didn't work.
And it started to turn on us because we knew that the Terminus was like a land of kind of like perpetual kind of darkness and things, just because of where it's located in Skartaris. But then it started to really flip to where he's wearing boots. This is ice. There's a polar bear on the two-page spread that he starts fighting with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, mentally you're just going, okay, this is change. What's going on? This is not just the Skartaris where it's gone a little bit. And then you see the big tagline back in the USSR. You're like, okay, all right, cool. Here we go.
Well, if you remember back to when it started, he was flying over the North Pole or whatever when he kind of crashed in.
Correct. Yeah.
So snow in that part of Skartaris and stuff, I guess, makes sense. I'd still have to, I don't know, diagram it out to understand why it's dark there, because in theory, you've got the interior sun and some of the exterior sun, but I guess you're high enough up that the sun's going to be totally black half the year anyways.
Yeah.
Speaking of the polar bear, if this were a TV show, if I were the Warlord, I'd get worried anytime I heard the opening theme music.
Pretty much. Something bad is going to happen because these two-page splashes usually do not end up well for the thing he's fighting, but there's always some big bad that's either a dinosaur or, in this case, the polar bear, and he's got to use his sword and his handgun to take it out.
Yeah, and hopefully he grabs the sword back because it's wedged into the guy. But yeah, I mean, occasionally we'll go to two-page splash of a nice vista overlooking Shambhala or something of that sort. But you're right, more often than not, it's a bear, it's a wolf, it's a dragon, it's pterodactyls or
Tyrannosaurus Rex, something.
Exactly, some minor threat. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny how that all plays out. And I thought it was kind of cool, like, he had went off on his own to basically go after Demios and basically did away with Demios. And we literally get a footnote that tells us Demios is done. Done in this comic.
Yeah, but that footnote is MG, Mike Grell, and
yeah.
He's, you know, one of three main writers on this book over the time.
So he's not done.
That may have been Grell's intention at the time. I'm pretty sure we never see Demios again, but you can't take a footnote like that as gospel truth.
Okay, this is the comic world, so he may reappear.
If Grell had decided there was a really good story to tell and bring Demios back is required for that, he'd have done it.
Yeah. That's true. I was just surprised he put that footnote in there. It said, hey, by the way, Demios is dead. And yeah, he is dead. I'm looking at it right now. He says, he's dead, gang. Yep. Guess who's not coming back? I was like, the way he wrote that, he seemed like, I don't want to write this character anymore.
Well, I think he had to do that because he'd also killed the character and brought him back once already.
Yeah, multiple times. He was literally a head on a hand at one point.
Yeah, yeah. That's just a wild visual. That would be the thing, if they did this as a live action, would probably be the hardest effect to pull off.
Yeah.
How do you do that without it being either too creepy, just not right, or
silly.
Or silly.
Yeah, I think it could go into that silly realm where you're like, okay, this is kind of corny and cheesy, you know?
Yeah, there's about 8 different ways it could go really, really wrong, and a very tiny little thing in the center of that Venn diagram where it actually works.
Yeah, yeah. So I agree with you on that. That would be a tough one to pull off.
Love to see him try, though.
Me too. I would love to see this some type of TV show. I would love it. Just even if it's animated, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be fun. They've done some animated with the character in Justice League and in one of the Tomorrowverse movies.
Oh, all right.
But they've got a blueprint here for an ongoing series that they really ought to do.
I agree.
Now, we do get some stuff back at Demios' castle with Tara, Shakira, Jennifer, who's still in this kind of almost trance-like state.
Yeah, she's kind of like a zombie at this point, a brain dead or in a coma, we'll say, but her eyes are open.
Yeah. And then we've got Faldrin, the guy who had befriended Jennifer. He had survived. I'm not sure if I totally realized that last issue or not, but he's sticking around for a bit.
Yeah, and I was surprised the two were taken off after Travis, when I say the two, Tara and Shakira, and they left Faldrin behind, which is true. He's like, I've proven I want to protect her, so they felt comfortable leaving Jennifer with him. But they only had the one horse, so I love the solution to that.
Well, and it kind of makes sense for Shakira to go in cat form, but the disappointment I have with this is where we should have had an issue of those two having a serious adventure off on their own.
I thought we would have had some more interplay because they set it up with, like, Tara's on the horse, and she's literally telling her, loosen up with those claws. I happen to know that you can balance better than that, because she's in cat form. And they could have had a whole, almost like comedic bit with them going and having some catty moments while at the same time building a relationship.
I think that was a major missed opportunity between this issue and the next, because I think those two kind of coming to terms of some sort could have been just a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, almost instead of being that tension and rivalry, almost working it out to where they're almost inseparable and best friends and trusting of each other, which I feel like that hasn't been built in here yet, even though maybe they'll play on it one day. I feel like they could have built that with the journey that they grow to learn about each other's backgrounds, know who they are, know their intentions, and really grow respect for one another.
There is an exchange in the two of them in the final issue we'll talk about today of 55, where it implies there's that sort of relationship with them now.
Yeah, kind of told, but we didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Develop. So that was a miss, but honestly, I'll give them a pass because this is a great comic anyways.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not any sort of fatal flaw or anything of the sort. But if somebody wanted to go insert a story into the timeline, that, I think, is one of the choice opportunities.
Yeah, I could see definitely a short story. Hey, between issues here and here, you could have like 2 or 3 issue or 4 issue miniseries, just, and it would be fun.
Yeah, yeah. I love, though, we cut back. We see the wolves again as Travis is still hiking his way back, he thinks, reminding us that, yeah, it's a dangerous place he's at. And then he realizes he's walked the wrong way, realizes the compass wasn't doing him any good, and he's outside back on Earth.
That's hilarious. And he's at was it the North Pole at this point? Yeah, the North Pole. So I'm like, and it says, welcome to the USSR. So he's on Russian soil at this point. And it's just funny because he's looking at the sun, he's freaking out the compass, and then boom, a fighter jet is coming out of the sun that's setting or rising.
He has enough time to realize, I've gone the wrong way, let me turn around and hike back.
Yep.
Then he realizes, wait, there's a fighter jet flying over me, and it buzzes him pretty close.
Really close. And he sees the little star on there, the red star, a MiG Fox bat, which I'm assuming was top technology back in the 1981.
Well, and he was commenting on how these things were experimental in 69 when he entered Skartaris.
Yep.
But now it seems to be commonplace or whatever. And the thing circling back on him, which I've got to imagine for a jet, takes a little bit of distance to go do.
Yeah.
And then it's doing a strafing run. He takes a couple of shots with his pistol. It looks like he takes at least 5. Yeah. But then when it makes another run and he's able to reload between circling back or whatever, he holds his ground. He shoots the damn thing down.
Was that not a Rambo moment with Rambo with the big Soviet helicopter coming and shooting and he's holding like an M60? Da, da, da. I'm like, this is like straight out of an action movie. You could see this happening.
Well, and doing it with a handgun.
It's like, come on.
Well, but we've established that he's a good enough shot.
Yeah, he's a crack shot.
That this is not insane or unreasonable.
Yeah. This was like totally the action moment, and he literally has to duck under the jet because he killed the pilot because it almost hits him in the head.
Well, it looks like it hits him smack dab, maybe in his left eye or something. It definitely takes the guy out.
Yeah.
Because he takes out the pilot, not the jet.
Oh, yeah. He takes him out. I'm just saying he has to duck down Travis because the jet almost hits him in the head. At that point.
Yeah. If the jet had been any lower, it'd have hit him because it looked like there couldn't have been more than 2-3 feet of clearance. And then I guess it goes up, flips over, and crashes or something?
Yeah. That was kind of funny. And then did you like his little comment there? Just like the Duke would have done as he blows the smoke from his pistol and spins it right into his holster.
That was awesome. There was definitely a Western gun shooter moment there.
I loved it.
It was a ton of fun. What got me was it seemed like before much time had elapsed, there's a helicopter going after the crashed MiG.
Yeah, it made you almost think that there's an Air Force base close by, because that rescue helicopter is there and on him when it's still smoking. And the sun, I don't know if it's still low, we can't tell, but he's covering up his eyes to see it. I think it hasn't risen that much more.
Yeah, I think, I took it as there was some kind of active thing the Russian military was doing. They had stuff deployed. He just happened to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
Yeah. This was a fun issue because I'm wondering at this point, holy mackerel, he's standing basically, I don't want to say naked, but not clothed very well. He has a cloak and his little warlord loincloth and boots and stuff with a sword and a pistol in Russia. This could go very south for him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How long are we going to spend in Russia at this point? I'm like, wow, okay, let's go.
Now, I do want to do a little digression here.
Okay, sure.
Because there's a fine line between chapter of story of a trade paperback kind of storytelling and this, which I kind of term the never-ending saga kind of storytelling.
Okay.
Because the difference isn't in the individual kind of middle chapter issue like this. Because this is bridging. We killed off Demios and Warlord hadn't gotten to his next adventure yet. But I guess to me, the difference is, well, this has a beginning, a middle, end of a little micro-adventure for Travis and stuff. This title lacks kind of those sharp-cut beginning-ending points in the narrative that you would get in basically almost any modern comic.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That is true.
I mean, if you look at, like, using a dated example, Legends of the Dark Knight.
Okay.
They would get people in there to do a 5-issue run of a story or something. And there was a very clean, we are starting from a nebulous point. At the end, we are stopping. And the next story could be taking place years earlier, later, or different characters. Who knows? Who cares? So very clear, almost firewall-level disconnects between issues at that point.
Yeah, and these stories tend to more flow from one to the other. And like you said, not a definitive end as much as here's this new wrinkle in the ongoing story.
Yeah, I mean, we've been following Travis's journey since that first issue special number 8. And yet there are places where there's maybe nebulous gaps between issues and arcs that if you wanted to slide a story into, you could. Because it's like, oh, they were continuing on their merry way on their horses. And the next issue, they're still riding their horses. Maybe something happened in between. Maybe something didn't. You know, but it's one of those where if you needed to insert something, you could, not clear cut, stop, end of story, and we're starting something from scratch almost.
Yeah, that's very true. And another thing, not to go too, we've talked about this 100 times. I was reading this and I was thinking, this is a good jumping on point. At this point, you know, this USSR story arc,
because
you kind of get I don't want to say a cut, but you see, okay, here's these characters, you get some the background characters, but I don't have to focus on them. This is a Travis story. Oh, okay, we're going into Russia. Nothing that happened before is going to preclude you or keep you from understanding everything you need to know in this.
Yeah, this feels like it would be the beginning of a trade or something like that, beginning of an arc or whatever.
Yeah.
But in a way that it continues fluidly from the previous issue without requiring you to have read the previous issue.
And I think that's the biggest thing right now is everything today requires you to have read one or two or three issues before that, typically, or you have no clue.
In some cases, I think they require you to study it, the previous issues, not just to read them.
To done a dissertation
just about.
In Batman lore or whatever. Yeah.
It's just when I got done with this issue, I was thinking, because there's a lot of aspects here that feel, because it's not like there's a major event. Well, I mean, shooting down a MiG, I guess, is a major event for Travis, but you know what I mean. It's not like there's a full-blown story the way we would get in maybe some other titles or other even issues of Warlord at this era.
Yeah, I agree.
So while it's got superficial resemblance to kind of that middle chapter of arc that I bemoan so often on the Monthly Comic Spotlight, it's fundamentally different in so much as it is part of that larger tapestry while still able to stand on its own. This was a satisfying issue.
Yeah. And to that point, I hate picking favorites, but out of these four, this is one of the ones I enjoyed the most out of the four that we read this time. And not that the others were bad or not as good in any way. This was just, oh, I like this because it's something completely different that I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is fun. And like you said, but at the same time, middle chapter, which is so weird. Today, middle chapter is never going to be your favorite. It's typically where you're bored and do I need to cut this title?
Well, to me, this is another chapter of the ongoing saga, the never-ending saga.
Yeah. Big difference.
Uh-huh.
They don't make them like they used to.
No,
unfortunately.
They don't. All right. So we got the backup feature of Dragon Sword here.
Yeah, by Paul Levitz, and we get Decilius and I can't remember the dude's name.
Thyron,
yeah. All right.
Now, was it just me? Because I don't recall the dialogue being as flowery, or I almost want to say Asgardian, as last issue.
It got really very different. I felt like this issue was harder to read than the verse because it got like almost Old English type, but it wasn't.
A little Old English, a little Yoda speak.
Yeah, very different.
Phrasing was very stylized.
It felt like it wasn't as easy to read as the first issue. And I couldn't put my finger on it, but now that you say it, that's exactly what it is.
I don't think it was as, I don't want to say whimsical, but happy-go-lucky is the first installment either.
I agree, yeah. It was different, and you got into some bizarre things with magic. It went really magic-heavy in this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, the big takeaway was this lead character of Thyron. He learns he's a pawn in the plans of his master and, I guess, the Archmage of this area.
Yeah.
And we get the backstory of the big bad for this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of, I mean, there were some good character moments, too, but there was a lot of info dump.
A ton of info dump, and here's the characters to set up the next two issues. Mini stories, we'll call them, not really issues.
I mean, this covers a lot of ground in 10 pages.
Yeah. And because of that, there's a lot of text.
Yeah.
So I felt like it slowed down a lot when we got to this backup in each one of the issues. You had to slow down.
I would agree with that. And again, part of it for me was just the way they phrased stuff slowed down the reading. It's like, wait, I got to decipher this almost. It wasn't bad. I liked the first installment of this better.
I agree. I think they could have made it a little more. Okay, at first I was complaining about the comedy a little bit. I was like, it feels like a little bit, you know, like a funny book. But here, I felt like they went away from that and it lost a little bit of its magic because, okay, that's your book. Let's keep it with the funny. You have some humor and keep it light. And instead, they try to go way too deep into the lore, into the seriousness of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when I read something like this, it's a four-installment thing. The first was 8 pages. The other three are 10 pages each. They could have done this as a one-shot if they wanted to.
Yeah, they really could have. Yeah. Yeah, it would have worked for me. Read it all together instead of have it spread out over a month. Or for us, it was spread out over however many weeks since we recorded the last one.
Yeah, yeah. The reading the first part, waiting a bit to read the other three didn't help it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it really hurt it much either, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
So I thought this was okay. But I don't know that after this arc it does, I don't know that we ever see Dragon Sword again.
Ah, so it went away. I will say this is markedly better than OMAC.
Low bar to trip over.
Exactly. OMAC was on the floor.
Yeah, which is funny because it's not a bad property. It was just a really bad backup feature.
It really was. It was rough. Rough going.
Well, shall we jump over to Warlord 53?
Yeah, let's do that, where you get no Warlord on the cover, which I thought was interesting.
No, but we get a thing saying a bold new look for the Warlord.
Yes.
One could take his invisible, I guess, on the cover. But the reason they mention that is because we have a new artist on the book.
Yeah.
Of Mark Teixeira.
Yeah. And what's funny is I was looking at it, I was like, this looks different. And I just totally didn't even look because we had never had a different artist up till this. And I'm like, did they put a different anchor on this? It looks very different.
It looks different in terms of it's not Grell, but it's the same style.
Yeah, it's the same. That's where I thought I put it up to inking. I didn't clue in that this is a completely different person.
Yeah.
Because like you said, the style is similar.
Yeah, I think they picked a good follow-on artist for Grell, and that's a hard thing to do.
I agree.
Now, Mark Teixeira is probably best known as the first baseman for the Texas Rangers, the Atlanta Braves, the LA Angels, and the New York Yankees over the course of 14 seasons. Or more likely, the comic book artist Mark Teixeira, who's best known at Marvel for Ghost Rider, Wolverine, Sabretooth, Cyforth, and over at DC, hadn't done a ton. He did some Jonah Hex stuff, Hex, which followed on from Jonah Hex, Power Lords, which is a three-issue toy comic, and then some issues of Warlord here.
Yeah, I think I saw him a lot on Ghost Rider, and yeah, when I searched for him before in the past, the baseball players comes up first.
Yeah, that's why I thought I'd mention it. I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, I'm like, huh, he plays baseball too. No, nope. Not the same guy.
Different guy. But yeah, he's done quite a bit over at Marvel, did some stuff over at Image too. Not a ton of work over at DC.
Yeah, not very much, which was surprising to me. But I knew him because I'm a Marvel reader and I knew him from over there. And I didn't know he hadn't done a ton of DC. So that was kind of cool that my first maybe DC stuff that I'm seeing by him is Warlord.
And again, he does a good job.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
I think the big difference we would have gotten if Grell had drawn this is on the title splash. I don't think we would have seen blood on Travis's sword.
Yeah, I agree with you. He would have left that out.
And it's not major or, well, it's a little major in some places, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a little more gory while being comics code friendly.
Yeah. It's definitely more violent, but it didn't cross the line for me of, oh my God, this is disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. It could be sparks for all you know.
Yeah. But I think Teixeira did a great job on the art here, and we're basically seeing that helicopter having landed at the MiG site to investigate with a full battalion of people, it looks like, and Travis just laying into all of them.
Which is very impressive because he literally just has the sword at this point because he had unloaded his pistol, and he's able to take on these Russian soldiers with machine guns.
Well, I think there's a little bit of, they're kind of startled of, what the hell is this guy with the sword doing?
Yeah, here in the snow, hardly dressed.
I love at one point, he's ducking the machine gun blast. One guy is accidentally shooting another guy. He throws his sword into the guy's chest, his time to pull it out. At this point, the pilot and the helicopter's realizing, I'd best get the hell out of here. And in this very action movie kind of a moment, Travis basically leaps and catches onto, I guess, one of the wheels of the helicopter and climbs in somehow.
Yeah, that's what I took it as, the wheel. And tosses the pilot and then says, first class nonstop all the way home.
Now, he is a jet fighter pilot.
That's true.
Apparently, he also knows how to fly a helicopter.
Yes, it translates. I wouldn't think it did, but here we are.
Actually, I take it back because if you look at the controls, he's got what looks like a yoke for a plane. I thought helicopters had like a one-handed joystick and then another thing to control the altitude and stuff like that.
I've been in quite a few helicopter rides and they've always had the one-handed joystick. So I was like, either this is a different type of helicopter or the artist made a mistake, in my opinion.
I'm going to go with the artist made a mistake.
I think so too.
It does explain how he can fly the thing.
It's true. Looks the same.
So this story obviously would have been different if Grell had drawn it. He might not have made the mistake and Travis would have crashed, died, and end of series.
We're done. Not only is Demios dead, so is Travis. We're done.
So we get him basically doubling back on his path the fast way. And then we cut back to Demios's castle. Jennifer is still kind of spaced out, but I guess she's able to get up, walk around, and go to Demios's computer lab, I guess?
Yeah, almost like sleepwalking. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in comes Ashiya, the witch. And this is where things got a little kind of rapid fire almost, because Falderin tries to protect Jennifer, but doesn't do too good against the witch. Gee, surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
She decides to help Jennifer, and it was a little kind of unclear as to exactly why. It seemed like she felt there was a... First off, she had nothing against Travis. That was all Demios and stuff.
Yeah.
And she felt she owed him a debt that she wanted to fully repay.
Yeah, which I thought was a little bit weird, but okay.
And then she also wanted to learn about the machines, figuring somehow Jennifer could teach her about the machines, and in exchange, she would teach Jennifer about magic.
Yep, a trade of goods.
Which, given Travis doesn't seem to be all that super tech savvy, I mean, he's not afraid of computers or anything, but Jennifer winds up taking a shine to these machines and knowing how to run them, which surprised me.
Yeah, because it's Atlantean machinery. How she knows how to run it, I have no clue, but cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But she knows them. She knows how to do everything with them.
But before that exchange of information can happen, the witch has to unwhammy Jennifer, and we get, you know, that Demios actually seemed to do something to her.
Yeah, it's something with her brain.
Yeah, he fires some kind of mental blast or something. I thought it was just the head on the hand would be enough to kind of freak anyone out. But there's also the comment that even though that incident was removed from her mind, and therefore not continuing to traumatize her, she's still got to heal.
Yes. And I thought the way that she chose to heal her was very cool, bizarre.
Shapeshifting into her dead mother's image?
Yeah, that was weird.
But it reminds us that the witch is a shapeshifter, which we've known all along.
It's true, because when we saw her, she was very beautiful, but then when you see her real form, she's haggard and old.
Exactly, exactly. And the witch makes comments to Faldrin of, you know, hold your tongue, I'll put the fork back in it and stuff, and other comments about him being a lizard or something like that, making me wonder, was that guy really always a guy?
Oh, yeah. I didn't take it that way, but that would make sense. Maybe he wasn't always.
Yeah, don't know. I mean, that's potential backstory. Could go either way. This is where we cue the montage of the witch is trying to heal Jennifer and teach her magic, which seems to work. I love how in one of those panels we've got like a robot butler cleaning up the ancient castle.
Yes, that was funny.
This is Skartaris. You got both the old and the new.
Exactly.
And Jennifer's able to teach the witch how to use the computers and stuff like that. So apparently she did heal pretty well. Meanwhile, Faldrin is keeping an eye on them because he doesn't trust the witch whatsoever.
Yeah, I love those panels. Hey, here's how the computers work. Hey, here's how you summon this big demon from hell. It's like, wow. Okay, cool.
This would be another fun one to see how they would do the montage in a live action TV show.
Yeah. How would they show that? It'd be fun.
Because I think they would spend more than just a few seconds on it to show that time is elapsing, knowledge is exchanging, and to, you know, build up the characters or whatnot.
And Jennifer gets very good at magic.
Yes, she does. We then cut back to Travis, who's been flying that helicopter until he's back about at the Terminator and realizing, oh, wait, I didn't gas up, and the thing crash lands.
But amazingly, he leaps out as it's sinking into the ice in the water. He leaps out just in a nick of time.
Not only in the nick of time, but he leaps pretty damn far.
Yeah, he is like an Olympic athlete or something. Because he jumps like about 20 feet out of the sinking helicopter. Like, wow.
I will totally give him, he is in excellent condition. You cannot survive in Skartaris without being that way. So, Olympian level athlete, sure, why not? But that was a bit much.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's there. He's realizing there's potential trouble behind him. Pulls out the sword. And lo and behold, it's Tara on horseback.
Yay! And the little cat, Shakira, jumps on his shoulder.
And we get a comment of the two have been getting along because since Shakira didn't bring a coat, she had to stay in her cat form versus risking hypothermia or whatever.
Yeah, that's funny.
So, again, there's a missed opportunity between the last issue and this, but I thought this was a fun issue.
It was fun. It was kind of cool. I didn't know how long we were going to spend in Russia at this point. So when I got to this, I was like, okay, that was a two issue. We're in and out of Russia real fast.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we've got another installment of Dragon Sword. And this is where the master and the mage magically teleport this kid to the castle of Emperor Quizzel, the big bad. Saying, yep, you got to go fight him. And he's game for doing it, even though he knows he's getting set up.
Yeah. And he's doing a good job of making it through this kind of labyrinth of traps and things, you know, creatures popping out.
He's starting to figure out how to use the dragon sword because he used it last issue to fly. Here he's shooting some blasts with it and stuff like that. We had already been told, I think, in the first installment, but reminded here this kid has an immunity to magic, which certainly helps if you're going up against somebody with magical abilities.
Yep.
We get some clues as to what's going on behind the scenes with the master squashing a skeleton before it can say too much, and the kid calling him out on it, which I appreciated.
Yep, I like that.
But then when we get towards the end here and he's fighting the big bad, we realize these two people who've been escorting him the entire way are just moral support. They can't actually get involved in the fight. I mean, that's against the rules, apparently.
Yeah, we're just going to watch. You figure it out, kid. Oh my gosh, yeah, that was kind of funny. Nice little twist.
Yeah, so we're ending with the kid on the floor and the guy's about to take his axe and hack him in two. And they're like, yep, sorry, we just gotta watch.
That was funny, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this feature had its moments.
This little snippet was better than the previous one, I thought, because we didn't get the info dump and it was more action-oriented. It flowed a little bit better.
I would agree with that, but I also felt that this one, in 10 pages, maybe tried to accomplish too much.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, because a lot happened in there.
I mean, we're kind of racing to, we're at the castle, we're in the thing, we're having the final duel and stuff like that in fairly short order.
Yeah.
So I agree this was better than the previous. I still think this is not Paul Levitz's best work by a long shot.
I would agree, because I've read some Paul Levitz stuff, and this is definitely not his best work. It's not horrible, but it's not his best.
Well, what's funny is, concurrent with this, he was doing Legion of Superheroes, and it was at one of its higher points in terms of what people were thinking of its quality.
Ah.
So it's not that Levitz was a new writer or anything of the sort.
Maybe he just didn't have his heart into this property. Who knows?
Or he just hadn't done much in the fantasy adventure realm.
Which, that's the truth of it. He didn't do much in it.
Because I think a lot of what he'd been doing before was either, well, I think it was all superhero stuff, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, I would imagine. Most of what he's known for is superhero stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think most of it's Legion. He's done quite a bit of other stuff, but I think that's what really put him on the map as a writer and such.
Yeah.
So, again, 10 pages for the backup. Not bad. Not great. Not much else to say about it, I think.
Yeah, it's just, okay. It's not horrible, so you didn't feel like angry having read it.
Exactly. But I can also understand why they didn't try to continue on with it, or why I don't know that it's ever been reprinted.
Yeah, it didn't catch on with me and it didn't catch on with you. So I think that speaks volumes. I would imagine there was probably letters, or I don't know if what they did back then, because you can't tell with the sales based on this thing. So they must have asked focus groups, you know, people who read it, kids. What'd you think of this story? Ah, this sucks. Ah, I want Warlord. I don't want Dragon Sword.
Well, I think a lot of it was the letters they were getting in and such.
Yeah.
In this case, did Levitz have another story with the characters he wanted to tell, and did the editors want him to tell it?
Yeah. And maybe he just like, I don't have time. I want to focus on Legion.
Which was, I think, a better use of his time.
Yeah.
Shall we head over to Warlord 54?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. We've got Travis, Tara, and Shakira heading back to the castle, go check on what's going on with Jennifer and such. And at this point, Jennifer seems to have learned quite a bit of magic.
And has changed her garb in accordance with being a mage.
Yes.
She is decked out like a full-on sorceress supreme.
Yeah, this is her kind of signature look for the series, I say.
And it works for me. It's kind of cool because you tend to, in the Conan stuff, and here, always have that magical character, the magic characters, and this fits with the magical character, the look of her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she's perfect, and she's loyal to her dad, so that's a pretty powerful person to have in your back pocket going on adventures.
Absolutely. I love how the witch has kind of gotten fed up with constantly being summoned by her quote-unquote daughter.
Yeah.
And wanting more out of the bargain than she feels she's getting and stuff. Again, this is another one where I think they could do insert some backstory in here with a backup feature or something like that if they had wanted to, of going into a bit more detail on how these two got along, what was really going on here, and some of that.
Yeah, they could have made it really cool.
I don't think we were missing anything, but I think there was more that could have been told.
I agree.
And I love how Jennifer's got this one line of, yeah, you know all that stuff already, mother, and it's literally in quotes in the dialogue, kind of a, I know you're not my mom.
I figured it out, or she can break through the guys maybe at this point with her skill.
Yeah, it's a little unclear either way. And all of this is happening as Travis, Tara, and Shakira are getting almost right to the castle door.
Yeah, it feels like it's coming to a head at a perfect time.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the witch decides to go greet them in the form of Jennifer's mother, which is Travis's long-dead wife, Rachel.
The look on his face is priceless because he's looking Rachel, and he's there with his current, I guess, wife, Tara. They got married, I don't know, girlfriend.
Yeah, they did. They had a kid.
They had the kid, Joshua, who they think is dead at this point. And he's like, what is my ex-wife doing here? What's going on? Just the look of shock.
Well, and I love he's going open arms to what he thinks is his dead ex-wife, or not ex, but dead wife. And Tara's like, hey, wait a second, buddy. But before she has a chance to do anything, the witch blasts Travis.
Yeah. You literally see Tara almost light up with anger. She's getting ticked at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, boom, he gets smoked right in the chest.
And I guess that triggers the portcullis or whatever for the gate to start to fall. And Shakira is able to shove Tara both out of the way and out of the castle.
Yeah.
But gets pinned underneath it.
Her little cat head's pinned. It was so sad.
And then the witch, having said she had nothing against Travis just an issue or so back, is seeming to have quite a bit against him at the moment.
Yeah, she is just laying into him, hitting him with magical beams, laser beams, whatever you want to call them, magical beams.
Magical blast after magical blast, but he's having none of it.
And then he goes from this thinking of my lovely dead deceased wife to, I got her a full chokehold and I'm going to choke her out. That was awesome.
I mean, I can only assume at this point the witch's plan was to basically fill the power vacuum from Demios by taking her magic, learn about the technology Demios had also been using, and kind of level up that way, and that Travis would put an end to that.
Yeah.
And sure enough, with the chokehold, he definitely seems to be trying to do that.
Yeah, and he choked her into an old lady. Into her original form, we'll say, not an old lady.
Well, one and the same, yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's ready to literally behead her when Jennifer puts a stop to that and blasts Travis.
So he's getting hit by his daughter and by Shia. And so how many blasts is this guy going to take to the chest? Boom, boom, boom.
Many as it takes, I think. But it's funny because Shia's like, okay, Jennifer, now finish him. And she's like, no, I didn't save you from him. I saved you from me. I'm going to take you down.
And I was so happy when you get to that page flip because you're looking at it and you're like, oh, man, he's just got his daughter back and she's laying into him. And her loyalties to this witch, no. She wants to take her revenge because she knew that wasn't her mother, and so it just made you light up and smile.
Yeah, this was a great showdown, and what an interesting way to take a character and in the span of just two or three issues, reinvent the character. She's still Travis's daughter, but now she is a highly skilled mage taking on one of the big bads of Skartaris.
Yeah, and at this point she's holding her own, but she literally takes her out, which I thought was just awesome.
Well, it's funny because she winds up almost blasting the witch, I guess, back into the computer lab area where it's got what looks like those Tesla coil type things.
Yep.
And she blasts the coils and the witch is like, oh, you missed. She's like, no, I didn't. And the coils then blast into the witch, just seeming like destroyer. And I'm pretty sure this is the last we ever see of the witch.
Oh, so she's gone. All right, cool. Boom, toast.
I think so. I could always be wrong on this, and there's nothing to say another writer couldn't change their mind later if they decide to revamp the property.
That's true. And I thought that was a good fight. And like I said, this is the type of character when they're building like these, almost like these groups of adventurers, they always have like the one that's skilled more like a thief or, you know, someone with like quick skills, you know?
Thief, the fighter, the magic user, the big strong guy. Yeah.
Exactly. And so she fits in with the group. And when you come to a certain character that you need that skill, boom. And she is skilled and it's explained. And I like her and her loyalty is never going to wane. So I love this whole group they have here right now.
Yeah. Well, and I love Travis is coming to, he's like, what's going on, Jennifer? Oh, wait. Something I got to take care of first. And he goes to talk to Tara, realizing she's probably not very happy at this point. But they literally kiss and make up.
That was like the perfect way to settle the things. Hey, baby, it was always you. That's not said, but it's the action, you know?
If they do a live action of this, casting the right actor as Travis who can play these moments, essential.
Oh, yeah. And if it's done right, this will play out so well. it just has tones in here of like old action flicks. You even get the macho stuff from like a current, like a Yellowstone type property. Mm-hmm. You can see all that stuff playing out in here. And if they had the right characters and the correct budget, or even if they didn't went animated, this could be so much fun.
The actor I'm leaning towards for Travis at the moment, I may have said this in the past, is James Remar, if he were about 20 years younger than he is.
Ah, okay.
Among other things, he was in Black Lightning as the tailor.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
He's been in a ton of stuff. I think he could pull it off. But having somebody who's got the right charisma and can do the action sequences believably, tall ask.
Yeah, it is a tall ask. It's tough to find someone who can do all that. But if you found the right person, it could be really a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we get the characters talking about what had happened before, getting everybody up to speed. And Jennifer's like, okay, you guys are heading home. That's great. I'm staying here. And he's like, what?
Exactly.
What better place to learn about magic in Skartaris than the home of the former master magic user of the realm?
Yeah, which I appreciated. I was a little bit disappointed because she's going off on her own, but it makes sense too because you're keeping the group small and you can pull her in when needed at this point.
Yeah.
And it's tough trying to make room and write plots that make use of a 4 or 5 character group. But if you get it down to these two, let's tell this story. Oh, hey, we're getting into this other thread. Let's pull Jennifer in at this point. And now here's Thaldrin. We need him, so we'll have him show up. Boom, boom, and now we can use him.
Although that could be a wild kind of a story thing. Imagine telling a version of Robin Hood and the Merry Men, where every installment you're adding another Merry Man.
Oh, that could be fun.
And then you're getting to where it's like, okay, you know, we start with 2 or 3, and then we get to 5 or 6 or 7, then we get to 20 or 30. Now we're at about 415. A couple of people are feeling left out because they don't get to hang with Robin as much, you know, all that kind of a thing.
I just want to go home.
There's so many directions that could take.
It could be a total comedy.
You'd have to play it as a comedy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here we've got still our core group, but we've got enough. Like you said, we got to be splitting them off a little bit. And Thaldrin staying with Jennifer, so it's not like she's alone in Skartaris. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And so even though you're like, oh, I wouldn't want to leave my daughter behind. I just got her. You see why he's doing it. And then he can write her in when needed. And you're not having to make stuff for her to do, if that makes sense.
Well, and I think there's some storylines that you would want to do with Travis and Tara that might get a little awkward if not only Shakira's there, but now Travis's daughter Jennifer's there and some stuff like that.
Yeah, because ultimately this is the Warlord book. It's not a Warlord and his pals book, you know?
Well, and that's where so many TV shows, I think, have made interesting decisions. If they did this as an ongoing TV series on the CW, it would have invariably turned into Team Warlord.
Yep.
And I think there's a balancing act here. If we do have supporting cast, but like you said, this is the Warlord's book.
Yeah.
We can go for a good stretch without Tara. We can go without Shakira for quite some time.
Yeah, and if we want to go heavy on the big brutish action sets, you can always, hey, a cheese day, let's go. He rides in. Let's, whatever it is, you know, whether it's a gladiatorial arena that they're going into, but you can leverage it almost like pieces on a chessboard whenever you need them, but it's essentially a Warlord story. So with his name on the title, he's the one who's going to be in the book and the side characters as needed.
Well, and that would have been another way to do this if they had ever set him up as kind of the de facto ruler of, you know, like, so suppose Tara and he wind up in Shambhala. It's peaceful times, but they need to go out adventuring. If every time Travis had taken a different group of warriors with him, here are the strong guys, here are the stealthy guys, here are the clever guys or whatever, that could have been fun too.
Oh yeah, a ton of fun.
But I liked how this kind of ended on the, we've put Jennifer where she's going to be for now. This is a, I don't say a turning point for the series, but it's a mile marker.
Yeah, it's a mile marker. And essentially, us, the readers, know that Warlord's going to have 2 kids in this world. Right now, he only knows he has 1.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. And that boy's going to show up again. I'm ready. Let's go.
Does Jennifer even know about Joshua at this point?
She doesn't know she has a brother at this point, nothing. Which, as far as we've seen, he hasn't expressed even the emotions of having lost a son to her. Because when he's been dealing with her, it's like, I got to save her. Oh, she's a zombie.
Hasn't had the time, yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't had any expression one way or another about anything that's going on in his life.
Yeah. Shall we head over to Dragon Sword for its final installment?
Yeah, the final fight between Thyron and the big bad.
Quizzel, I think it is. Yeah.
Quizzel. Yeah, I kind of forgot his name.
We get a couple of things here where really the kid should have been dead at the beginning of this installment, I think, but that would have been a short story. We get again reminded he's immune to magic, so you can kill him with fists, but you're not going to do it with a hex or a curse or something like that. It's like, okay. But then when the guy tries to destroy the dragon sword and Thyron saves it, and then they all like merge, that got kind of wild.
Yeah, that played out really weird to me. I was like, okay, this is a new power that it just kind of conveniently happened. I don't know how it happened, but here we are, where he becomes a dragon. The sword and him merge, and he takes on the form of a dragon.
I would have at least had the sword turn into armor for the dragon.
Maybe, something. It was just weird. He just green scales. Yeah.
Because it's like, where did the sword go?
Disappeared. There's a scabbard around him, but yeah, it's just gone. It's weird.
So, I mean, it was an interesting look or whatnot, but this is, again, we're in the span of 10 pages. Quite a bit happens. And we even have time for a couple of pages of epilogue.
Yeah. And the epilogue I thought was kind of funny. The girl falls in love with him. My love. Oh, what was her name? I forgot her name now. But anyways, one of the girls falls in love with him who was there just watching the fight
happen.
Well,
that's the Archmage or whatever.
The Archmage, yeah. And he's just like, Anna, the Archmage. And he's like, nah, not at the peril of my soul. I'm good. I'm out of here. Don't want anything to do with you. I'm going to just do my own thing. Get out of here. I'm just going to fly away and see you, Decilius. Bizarre.
Well, yeah, because we get the reveal that the Archmage is the sister of the big bad. The master the guy had been training under is their father. All of this had been set up for years to defeat the son who'd fallen to the dark side or whatnot. This kid's like, you've used me, I've done what you need, I'm getting the hell out of here, and by the way, Decilius, my squire, the world is now yours. If they don't treat you well, call me and I'll fix it. And then he literally turns into the dragon and flies off. With the sword at that point, it looks like.
With the sword. So the sword is in hand, it was not there before. And see you, Decilius, the talking monkey. On your own!
So, I mean, they could have easily started the next installment. It's years later, you've got the monkey on the back of the dragon guy, and new adventure begins. I mean, I'm fine they didn't go that way. I didn't dislike this, but I felt some of it like the big bad was the brother of the Archmage, the master was the father and stuff. There's a fine line between foreshadowing and telegraphing. I felt this one a little on the telegraphing side.
Yeah, and it felt rushed with the amount of material and also with the wrap-up. It was really quick. And it told me that it was not the letters or the feedback or whatever it was not good for this story. So they killed it. Or I don't know, something happened.
I don't think it was the feedback. I don't think the feedback was that fast those days.
Yeah, it just disappeared or it ended quickly to never be seen again, I guess.
I think by the time they got the first issue out, they had already had to get pretty far on this last installment because it's, again, just a couple of months. You got to get it printed. You got to get it shipped out. People got to read it. They got to mail in the letter the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm.
So the cycle time on feedback, I think, was more in the multiple months kind of category. Well, I know it was in the multiple months kind of category. So they would have had to have gotten horrific feedback on the first issue to say, yep, we're killing it off on the fourth.
Yeah, that's true.
Not impossible. I just don't think it's likely.
I agree.
So not a bad story, but not a great story. And again, nothing I think they felt the need to ever really kind of go back to.
Yeah.
Which I get, but it's also interesting that Levitz never tried to pull the character or a future version of the character into Legion or some other story he did later.
Yeah, it could be done. You know, you could have this character flying as a dragon one day, but yeah, it seems kind of forgotten to time, which I guess them reprinting it in the omnibus will keep it alive if they do that, but otherwise, about to print it one day or lose the rights.
Oh, I don't know that they lose. Well, sooner or later, public domain. That would be a long way in coming.
Yeah.
Although this is from 1980.
81, I think.
81, late 81, yeah.
Yeah, so it's 42 years ago.
Wow.
It doesn't seem that long, but it's a long time ago.
That's true. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to include the backup features when they do it in the omnibus. I don't think they should, with the Wizard World ones being the exception.
I would agree. Yeah, Wizard World ties directly into it.
All right, let's go head over to Warlord 55.
Here we go.
This one I thought was fun.
It was fun.
We continue with Tara, Travis, Shakira on horseback getting near Shambhala. They're going to stop through Ashir's kingdom briefly, and they hit the vista where we should see the road down below. And what they see is what I guess is this massive watchtower or whatever, and this huge army assaulting it and not doing that well.
Yeah. There's a full-on siege. It's not going well.
And we get this nice page of that siege is going, and Travis is not weighing in, not knowing which side to weigh in on, I guess, until he realizes that the guy who sounds the retreat is his buddy Ashir.
Yeah, he's like, he sees the guy yell retreat. Oh my God, that's Ashir. And they were, like you said, getting boiling oil poured on them. They're getting shot down with arrows. They are not faring well in this battle at all.
Yeah. And I love how Travis reminds Shakira, hey, go grab your own horse and slip into something a little less cat-like unless you want to really ruin the guy's day.
That's very true.
And then Travis and company catch up with him, and he's like, oh, I saw that you lost the fight. And he's like, oh, you saw that, did you? You know, and I guess they head back to Ashir's place to tell the tale. Yeah, because they're back at Kumbuka, and Travis tells the whole backstory of Demios is dead, Jennifer's back, staying there as a mage, all that. Everything Ashir missed in the intervening time since they've seen each other. And it comes out that not only had they lost, but Ashir lets loose that, yeah, this is the third time we've tried to take that place.
Yeah, so they are definitely not faring well.
And I love how Travis is just incensed. Third try and you haven't done it yet? And it's like, well, that place is well fortified. A small group could hold it indefinitely. And Travis is like, no, they couldn't. Not against me, is what he's clearly thinking.
Yeah.
And it looks like Tara and Shakira had been getting a tour of the place. And Tara had been there before because she was, I think, betrothed to Ashir at one point.
Yeah.
And I love how Ashir tries to put the charms on Tara. And she's like, yeah, drop dead. He immediately switches to Shakira. And she's like, yeah, drop dead.
Neither one of us are having anything to do with you, man.
And again, the casting for him would be critical to get somebody who could really pull off the charm in that old kind of Errol Flynn sort of a way, I think.
But it was so funny with Ashir saying that kitten has claws, and Travis is like, how right you are. He doesn't know that she literally has claws.
Yeah. I'm curious if and when he ever finds out.
Well, yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
I love, though, how Travis goes to Tara and says, you know, hey, I'm going to offer my services. You okay with that? It'll be the last time, I swear, kind of a thing. And she's like, yeah, sure, go do it. And this is the exchange I was telling you about earlier, where I feel like they've felt like they've built up a bit more of a relationship between Shakira and Tara.
Yeah.
Because Shakira's like, you don't believe that, do you? And Tara's like, no, but he does.
He believes his own nonsense that this is going to be the last time I go on this crazy adventure. Yeah, no, he's never done. It's never the last time with this guy.
No. And I love how all of this kind of plays out because they end up on horseback, Ashir and Travis, having delivered this giant, I'm going to call it a wooden coin.
Yeah, it's like a smiley face. Have a nice day. It reminded me of, oh, what is that? Doomsday?
Well, Watchmen.
Watchmen.
The smiley face on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, was this around the same time that Watchmen was coming out? I don't remember.
It's before.
Before. Okay, all right.
And I love, right before that Ashir's like, so what do the runes on it mean? And Travis is like, yeah, not much. Very little from where I come from of the have a nice day.
Funny, yeah.
So it's immediately clear they're trying the Trojan horse gimmick. And the people in the fortress, watchtower, whatever the hell it is, like, oh, I guess it's a peace offering. It looks friendly enough. Let's bring it inside. And somebody's like, oh, wait a minute, because they notice a door in it. It's like, there could be dozens of men hiding in here. Let's torch it. So they light the thing up as a bonfire, and they're whooping and hollering and stuff like that. And we cut to one of the tower guards getting impaled from behind, because it was nothing but a distraction.
Yeah, their whole army has kind of gone out for the bonfire. And meanwhile, not seeing the army coming up behind them.
Yeah, Travis and a select group of Ashir's warriors have come in the back way and taken over the fortress and basically locked the other guys out.
Yeah, that was awesome. I love that.
Now, the leader of it, where he's like, you know, throwing down the sword, damn you, and stuff like that, I'm curious if we see him later.
Yeah, it seems like he's a character that they could make something out of. Like, he looks like just the look on his face, and he wasn't killed, like, he could reappear.
Yeah, I don't know if he does or if I think he should, but he's definitely had that feel to it.
Yeah, but it was a nice done in one. You get this little adventure, and they're kind of off, but you get that tease at the very end.
Well, before we get to the epilogue, we've got Shakira deciding to stay, because she's seen Shambhala at its height. She doesn't want to see it, you know, however it is now.
Yeah.
So she's going to stay here with Ashir, and I think that'll be interesting, depending how that plays out. But then we get the epilogue, where Travis and Tara stop as they get near Shambhala, and he's like, this is where I met the woodcutter who helped me stop that Terran invasion. I hope he's okay. I know he had a son, because the building is torched, there's skeleton or two about, and Tara's like, well, it's best not to wonder.
Yeah, and that's the woodcutter who had raised their son.
Yeah, and then we get the final page. No dialogue on it, but they're heading into Shambhala. Word has gotten out from an advanced scout that they're coming in, so they're met with a parade and all of this. And here is this redhead kid, their son Joshua, not that they realize it, waving to them. They're waving to the crowd. They go past, either don't see him, don't recognize him, whatever. He seems rather despondent about that.
Yeah, I wonder if the kid knows at this point. Oh, I don't know. You probably know, you read this, but I'm like, at this point, the way the kid reacted, I almost felt like, that's my dad. And the kid dad doesn't recognize me, walks away looking sad.
It's either that, or back when they did the story with the man in the iron mask kind of a thing with Travis.
Yeah.
Travis was in the mask, and his son helped him at that point.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right.
So the kid may recognize him from that.
I'd forgotten about that.
He would have been too young, I think, to remember Travis as his father and stuff. But we do have him still having the watch band as an armband.
That's true. Yep, it's there on his arm.
So for people who haven't read long enough to recognize that, and let's face it, we're, what, issue 55, so 56 issues into the thing, and that watch was established back in, I think it was first issue Spotlight, or maybe the first issue of Warlord.
Yeah, so we're coming up on 5 years.
Pretty deep cut as far as a callback goes.
Yeah, that's 4 years, let's say. 5 years since the title's been around, almost. So that's a very deep cut.
Let's see. This would have been November 24th, 1981, and the property started back in August 1975. So, yeah.
Wow. So it's a very deep cut.
Well, and at that point, the prevailing wisdom was that the readership turned over every, you know, 4 or 5 years thereabouts.
Exactly. And the thing is, when that comes up, that armband, enough will be given to the new readership who came in that they'll be like, oh, that's cool. And if you dug up a back issue, you can actually see, oh, yeah, look, it was way back there.
And even if you don't get it, you get that the kid was expecting something, and the focus on the armband is a clue, even if you don't know what it means.
Yeah, you're looking at it and you're like, what's up with this kid? Something important. What's going on with him? I'm curious.
Why did they spend the page on him, essentially? Yeah.
Yeah, it piques your interest.
So I'd have to go reread the issue or two where I think we saw the kid last, because he was going, I think, by the name Tinder at that point, although I can't swear to that. And of course, they know him as Joshua. So bringing him back into play, I think, was a good thing.
I agree.
And then we've got a new backup feature.
Yeah.
This time it is Arion, Lord of Atlantis.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I enjoyed the Arion series back in the day, and it went, I think, 35 issues in a special and such. But I'll be honest, I wasn't really blown away by this backup feature.
Me neither. I didn't like this as much as the Dragon Lord stuff.
Dragon Sword?
Sword stuff that we had before. It just was a little bit info dump, and it just didn't hook me.
There was a lot of info dump, a lot of setting of the scene, not much payoff.
No.
We wind up learning that Arion, who's the magic user and protector of Atlantis at that point, and this is set way in the past, so presumably the same Atlantis that became the Skartaris stuff, Arion's losing his magic, and his master is gone. I took that as, did he die? But he has to go looking for his master after seeing a vision of him. So it sets up a quest, as is, you know, par for the course for a lot of these fantasy adventure type things. It wasn't bad, but there was like a page or two of, oh yeah, the dinosaurs were kept as zoo animals, then they went loose, and then they got extinct again. Little things tossed into the captions that didn't need to be there.
It was text heavy for sure. It just, the writer, I think it was writers, I think there was two of them.
Thought it was just Paul Kupperberg.
It says Paul Kupperberg and Jan Dersima? Oh, writer. Okay, yeah. Okay, never mind. That's the artist.
It's Paul Kupperberg and Jan Dersima. And then under it, under Paul Kupperberg, is writer, creator, slash storytellers, plural, applying to both of them, and then slash artist for Jan Dersima.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I took it as they're both the writer for some reason.
This is why transcribing credits out of a comic into a database is a fool's errand at times.
Yeah.
Because it's like, how would you handle all of this? I mean, clearly it was Cooperberg's creation, and this is the creative team that I think went on to do the series.
Oh, okay. Did you like it outside of this better than what we got here, I'm assuming?
I picked up the entire run at one point after it had, I think, come out and read through it and enjoyed it, but that would have been sometime in the 80s.
Okay.
So not necessarily long after it had come out.
I wonder if we get this for the next several issues. This is the backup.
Oh, we do. We do.
Okay, so we'll be reading more of it.
We get it through, I think, issue 62.
All right. And he's a dinosaur fighter and magic stuff, so a little bit of both.
He's a magic user. He just happens to fight dinosaurs here. That's not his thing.
Oh, okay. The fighting dinosaurs was just a one-off. All right.
He is the ancient Atlantis Doctor Strange, if you will.
Okay, that's cool. It works.
Just to put it at a high-level concept using a Marvel reference.
Okay, I just assumed he was a sword fighter, too, because they had him fighting the dinosaurs with the sword.
Back then, who isn't a sword fighter?
Yeah, that's true.
That's a sword he literally found in the ground near where he fell.
Yeah, that's true. It was just sticking out of a pile.
Yeah.
A pile of what?
Snow,
I don't know.
Or whatever it looked like. Yeah, why it was there was not clear to me.
Yeah, it's just a convenient sword as the dinosaur's coming at him.
Yeah. So I didn't think this was bad. I didn't think it was great. It was the first appearance of Arion and Lady Chain.
I'm the same way. I was just kind of like, it's okay. That's where I am. Versus like OMAC, I was like, oh, I didn't like this. This is more like, oh, it's okay. It's not bad. It's not good. It's just, it's there.
Well, and I think when it leaves Warlord as a backup, it goes on to be its own series.
Yeah, that means it fared better than Dragon Sword.
Yes, and better than OMAC.
Yeah, and better than OMAC.
Well, both OMAC and Claw, though, were basically, let's go tie off something that we'd already killed earlier. And then after we go through the Arion stuff, the next backup we get is Barren Earth, and that lasts a good while.
What is Barren Earth about? Is that like a post-apocalyptic thing?
Post-apocalyptic kind of a thing, and it wound up getting concluded in a 4-issue limited series, Conquerors of the Barren Earth.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
But we get, I don't know, 15 or 20 installments of Barren Earth, I think. Fair number.
Oh, wow. Quite a bit.
All by the same creative team, which is always a good sign.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it then.
But a little bit before we get there, Ron Randall was the artist there, and he later does some art on Warlord.
But I tell you what, over these 4 issues, I really like the Warlord stuff. This was a ton of fun. I like how we got the daughter. We got the conclusion. We went to Russia. We got the conclusion. We got the new tease of the sun. It was just a ton of stuff happened in 4 issues. None of it confusing. All of it could be read at any issue you picked up. Fun stuff.
Well, and I think Mark Texiera did a great job picking up the art after Mike Grell.
Yeah, he did. He did it well enough to where I almost thought we just had a different anchor. I was like, huh, the splash looks a little different. Oh, this looks a little different. And I didn't even think about it. And then I look at the thing. I'm like, oh, that's why it looked different. When you said it.
You can see differences, but you don't look at it and thinking, there's some, I look at an issue and I'm like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, this was not that.
Yeah, they did a much better job here. Yeah. When we were doing Future Quest, which we did a back issue spotlight on not too long ago and talked about in the book club, when they hit the Ariel Olivetti issue, which is like a painted style for characters that are literally cartoon characters, it was beautiful art, but I'm like, what the hell? This is so different than the previous and the next issue. It was jarring.
Yeah, that's not good.
So for them to have found an artist that fit the look of the book, yet was his own artist, I was very happy with that.
Yeah. And honestly, I also appreciate it when artists do that. They have, I hate to say this because some people might take offense to it, but I think you need to be respectful of what came before and you are finishing up or filling in for this many issues on this book and people are reading this guy's creation, Grell. And I almost think it's like a tip of the cap and a respect for what came before that. I'm not going to say the hell with this. I'm doing my own style. I'm going to be respectful and kind of like do it in that same type of style and fashion to where it flows very nicely. I love it when an artist does that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for easing your way into a book, getting comfortable, and then changing some stuff.
Yeah.
If a new artist comes in and suddenly everybody's got a different costume, a different look, different hairstyle, whatever, that's jarring.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had a lot of fun with these issues. This was good stuff.
Yeah, I was happy to see Ashir back. We got the end of The Witch, like you said. A lot happened in these 4 issues, yet it was just another day in the life of for Travis.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Ton of fun. Ton of fun. Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.